This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library, and our guest today is Mr. Clarence Sowers, who lives at 1737 Clay Street in Decatur. Mr. Sowers, have you lived in Decatur all your life?
Nearly, not quite. I moved here in 1912 when I was 20 years old, but I had been here from 1903 and 4.
So you had known Decatur previously.
Yes.
Where did you live? Where were you born?
I was born in southern central Illinois in Jasper County, and I lived there until I was 10 years old. And okay. my mother passed away when I was 3.5 years old, and she's buried down there. And then my father moved to Indiana in 1901, the year I was in February that I was 10 years old. Yeah. And I lived there until 1912, when I moved to Decatur, thinking I was going to be an auto mechanic. Automobiles was coming on.
How'd you happen to choose Decatur?
Well, because my grandfather lived out where Pershing Road, out on North Water Street at that time.
Oh.
And I was induced to come here because I thought it was going to be something in promise for me, you know.
Right. But you didn't get into auto mechanics?
No, I wound up shoveling coal for 15 cents an hour.
Well, those auto mechanics must have been pretty early in those days. I mean, there wasn't very much advanced in those days.
No, they could tell that I was no auto mechanic. There wasn't any to fix, and I couldn't have fixed one if I...
And you couldn't learn?
No, there wasn't enough of them to work on.
I see. So you began by shoveling coal.
Well, yeah, I had to make a living.
Yes.
I only had $40 when I came to Decatur. And I had to watch that because we had $15 a month rent to pay.
Oh.
And so then I shoveled coal that winter. The Wabash Railroad, they were storing coal for the strike.
Oh.
And so then when spring came, I got a job in construction work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my livelihood was at from then on.
Did you build houses?
Yes.
Just houses?
Well, all
or
types.
Or any buildings that are now standing in the
Yes.
What did you work on?
Oh, what is it?
What buildings that are still here that you work
on? Any number of I think it was three churches. One Mount Zion, and the one out here by Caterpillar now, and the one where our lodge hall is now at the corner of Division and Lober Street. Mm-hmm. I built that for the Pentecostal Church, mm-hmm. and our lodge bought it just only last year.
I see.
And I've worked on several churches, both Catholic and Protestant. When I first began, I started in business in 1921 for myself, but I had learned a trade, bricklayer's trade, in the meantime.
Uh-huh. Well, was this a construction business you started in 1921?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so you started out for yourself?
Yes.
Tell me, was construction much different at that time?
Very much so.
What were some of the differences?
Well, they had no rubber-tired wheelbarrows for the helpers in those days, and everything was manual. There's nothing mechanical at that time, and like there is now, troweling machines, mm-hmm. they didn't know anything about them for concrete and everything.
So the work was really hard.
Well, yes, but then in those days, people worked.
Right.
Now then, they're shy of work.
What about the hours?
Oh, well, I was used to from daylight till dark in Indiana, and I come out here and got on an 8-hour day, and I'd come home of an evening after work, and I'd hoe my potato patch. We had a garden, and I'd hoe that over, and still wasn't dark yet, and I didn't hardly know what to do with my time, and I was really living in luxury, and I got 25 cents an hour.
Wow, those were great days.
Oh, yes, and I got $12 a week, and... Yeah. If I got in a full week, I'd get a $10 gold piece and 2 silver dollars.
Oh.
And we always called that Eagle Was Flying if we get in a full week.
Uh-huh.
And that was really something to see that $10 gold piece and 2 silver dollars.
You worked only when there was work?
Our work terminated about October mm-hmm. every year because they didn't work any in the wintertime
in cold weather.
And that's
they had different kinds of concrete.
Well, yeah, but then they didn't have any facilities for taking care of it in those days. And then we had no work until about the 1st of April the next spring. Mm-hmm. And you can learn to live without anything when you... And they didn't have no relief in those days either.
Right.
And I never was on relief in my life. I should have been, but during the Depression.
Uh-huh.
But we went ahead and we got by.
Uh-huh. Well, now, but you changed to, at one time, I believe you said you worked on the railroad.
Oh, yeah. That was after I came out here. There was a friend of mine, my father's. He had learned about me, and he got me the job as freight foreman for the Pennsylvania Railroad.
Oh.
And I was a freight foreman there for 2 years for them. And so I never did know what my salary was. It was good or better than what the other was, but I could never figure. I kept track of my hours. But fortunately, I always got more money than what I thought I had coming.
So that's a nice surprise.
Yeah, it really was. And so I liked the job real well, but I still wasn't quite cut out for office work.
You wanted to be outdoors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you changed it back, or?
Well, I went back into construction work again, uh-huh. And I was working for different contractors, like the Lynn Scruggs building here at the corner of Main Prairie. That's one of them. And then the Catholic school down there on Jackson Street. And I was working for the other contractors that time. And then, so I didn't have anybody to vouch for me, and I couldn't get into union then because I had to have a voucher, you know.
Oh.
And I had some difficulty getting started out there, and they, I don't know, the unions, they was kind of funny that way. So I went on my own. And I thought, well, I'll do the best I can.
You mean non-union?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I thought, so then I had pretty good reputation as a builder, although I just didn't have the backing, and I had to start on my own. And the first job that I had by contract was on North Ever Street, north of or Union Street, right north of Grand Avenue, about a half block. And this fellow there, he had me to figure the job, and I didn't know too much about figuring. In fact, I only had an eighth grade education.
Oh.
It was my own fault, because I didn't like books.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned later I should have got my education. Mm-hmm. I had a lot to learn after that. And so then I told the fellow what my bid was, and he says, you'll do it for that? I says, yes. And he says, will you come out all right? I said, well, that's to be seen. He said, I'm going to give you the job. So that was my first contract. Wages then had gotten up to 75 cents an hour.
Was your bid too low?
No.
It was
competitive.
It was low.
Yeah. And I got the job.
Did you make money on it?
Yeah, I did. And so then I kept track of every hour and everything like that. And I had some of the union fellows. They didn't have no work. And so I hired them. I didn't think they'd work for me because I was non-union.
Did you have any trouble with the union?
Not once. They were gracious with me. Uh-huh. That is, half of them were.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the union fellows would cite me to a job that they couldn't get. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, now you go and figure that job. Says, you can get it, but we can't. And the scale at that time was 75 cents an hour. So I started on the job, and I kept track of it. And when I paid all my bills and everything like that, I made an average of 90 cents an hour after I paid all my bills. And that encouraged me. I've oftentimes wondered if I would have went settled on the job, whether I'd ever continued on or not.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got burned a few times, but then that was okay. That goes in life, you know. But all through those years that I was in business, over 50 years, I kept all my customers, never lost to one of them.
Uh-huh.
That's why I didn't get retired when I'd like to, because, and even
they
today,
they kept wanting you to work.
Well, I could be working today if I listened to them.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate that a lot. I went through the Depression. And I didn't have much work.
Tell us about the Depression. What were some of your memories of the Depression?
Oh, that was really something. I never was on WPA, CWA, or WPA. No, PWA.
You can't get used to all those initials.
Oh, yeah.
So many initials.
Oh, yeah. And others that was on relief, they could get on them, but I wasn't on relief. And so then, as time went on by, and it was really lean, all right. All I'd do, I had my truck and telephone, the only two things that helped me make a living.
Were you married?
Oh, yes.
Had a family?
And had three children, yeah.
It was hard.
And they were in school. And so then my wife, graciously, if we didn't have anything, she never lamented about a thing at any time. And so
she helped you to manage.
Oh, very much. I'll tell you, it was wonderful. Poor thing, I wish she could have lived in an enjoyed the fruits of our labors that we'd done without so long there.
Mm-hmm.
but we was never envious of the other party. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, they're a better manager or they had a better break than what I had. And during a depression there, why, I had my truck and I'd haul coal. And by the way, I helped out the Red Cross and I helped haul flour for them. And I finally told Miss Love, she was administrator, I said, I can't help anymore because I got to keep this gasoline to operate my truck. And she said, if we furnish the gas, will you haul the flour? Yeah. With some of those fellows on relief. You mm-hmm. couldn't hardly get enough of them mm-hmm. to even help load or unload the flour. Mm-hmm. And so then I never once
got... But you mean they didn't want to work?
No.
They wanted to take some money but not work.
Yeah, and you know, we'd haul a flour down there across from Shootle's Laundry there where Kilburn's storage lot is now. And put in that there brick building that used to be there. And right around the corner, when they got on relief, had turned in their auto license, you mm-hmm. know, because you couldn't be on relief and...
Have a car.
No. But they had a better car than what I had. Oh. I had an old Essex. They don't make them anymore. Mm-hmm. And, sir, you know, then they'd come and they'd get their flour and their commodities and thing and carry it right around the corner and put in their car and go on home.
Now the car was illegal.
Well, in a sense it was, because they...
They didn't have a license?
No, they had to surrender their license.
But were they driving without a license?
Oh, sure, yeah, everybody did in those days. About everybody. I had a license on mine. Don't know how I got it, but mm-hmm. I had a license on both my car and truck. Mm-hmm. And I never heard of one being arrested for operating without a license. And so I still tried not to be envious of that. Mm-hmm. And so then... But never did I get an orange or a sack of meal or a sack of flour. And I'm glad, in a sense.
You were independent.
Yeah, really was. Didn't have anything to be independent for, but I was gracious that we got along the way mm-hmm. we did. And then I had my truck, and most of a while, one of my customers called me, and I'd get a little old job, and some of my competitors, they'd see me out with a wheelbarrow and a 2x4 in there going to a job, you know, and they'd say, hey, you got a job? I said, yes. He said, how'd you get it? I said, well, just one of those things. Mm-hmm. And that kept me from being on relief. Uh-huh. And I got a lot to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. In all those years, the first customer that I had, well, not the old man that I got the job on Union, but the next one in line, I did 53 houses for him 1 year.
Well, great.
And so he never questioned me once. And I was afraid maybe... I'd do it on some of them on the cost plus plan, cost plus a percentage for my insurance and things. And I told him one day I'd building brick houses for him. And I said, say, Will, I says, we better be careful here. I says, we're going to be in bad. He says, what's the matter? I said, well, one of these days I'll build a house for you. It'll be a few $100 more than what you thought it'd be. And I says, you'll think I'm crooked with you and I'll lose your business. He said, have I ever questioned you? And I says, no. And he said, well, you go ahead. Yeah. And he's my customer clear on up until he died with a heart attack.
Wow.
And it was just wonderful.
What about the times during the war, the Second World War?
Well, that didn't bother me too much there. I was exempted during the First World War on account of the children. Yeah. And
And you were in construction business during the Second World War, and that was important.
Well... Yes, but I went right along, and I wasn't drafted or anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't called up on that. I was the First World War. Mm-hmm. I went through my examination, all like that, and I was exempted on account of I had the three children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, now, how long did you work? When did you retire?
I don't know. I had an awful time of retiring. Mm-hmm. I wanted to retire about 10 years before I did. Mm-hmm. But they just kept hounding at me, and my son says, I give him all my equipment, my trucks and everything like that. And I told my customers, I said, I ain't got nothing to work with. He says, oh, yes, they have. They knew I'd given it to him, you know, mm-hmm. and he had some of my customers, and he had his own as well. And like I had said, I could still be working yet, although I'll be 88 this Sunday.
Yeah.
And But I've had wonderful health, and I'm so grateful for it.
Well, let's talk about some of the changes you've seen in Decatur.
Oh, well, I moved here in 1912. And before that, though, I'd been out here where the Caterpillar is now. My uncle lived there on a farm. And I'd go out there And my grandfather lived on North Water Street there, which is now Pershing Road. He ran a truck garden there. So I'd go out to my uncle's, and I'd look back down Decatur, and I could count all those light towers. It was 11 light towers way up in the air. They must have been 150 or more feet in the air. I could count all of those towers from out there. Staley's had one or two steel tanks, so to speak, on end, and that's all it was of Staley's. It wasn't even Staley's yet. And they had, about the time Staley took it over, they had a wildcat whistle on there, and I never will forget that. Could hear it all over town. They still got, but they never blew it anymore.
You mean they blew it at morning and
yeah, night? At work time.
Work time.
And so a lot of them don't sound any signal anymore because the people that holler about it, you know, wake them up. They sleep now in the daytime, run around at night, you know. And so I saw a great many changes here in Decatur. And when they had the streetcars, they were open vestibules. They wasn't enclosed there. And the motorman, he'd stand out in front there.
The winter and summer?
Oh, yeah.
Winter and summer.
Oh, yeah. That poor motorman, I don't know how they ever made it. And the motorman would be out there. Then the conductor, he'd go inside. When he get on there, the door would slide back. It didn't hinge. It slid back in there. And you go in there, and then somebody would close the door to keep the cold out. I don't know whether it was even, I don't know if it was heated or not. And then they had two on there, the motorman and conductor. Then along about early 30s, I think it was, they got what they called a Burney car. It was a one-man operated car, motorman, conductor, all in one. And you paid your fare. Oh, and there's a Woods, a fellow by the name of Woods worked for the power company. It was then Decatur Railway and Light. And he invented a fare box. And it was fastened to the floor, and it was about 3 feet high, and had a place there to drop your coin in, or your tickets. They had sold tickets, so many tickets for a dollar. And he would leave them lay there and see if it was the right amount, and then he'd trip something and fall down in there. And so Mr. Woods invented that fare box. And I learned only last night that he lived on North College Street. I know he's from Decatur. And last week when I was in California, I rode on an electric line out there, both a narrow and a wide standard gauge
interurban.
Yeah, and I went there for a novelty to ride down. I ride all the trains all up and down the mountains and everything like that, and I just like that kind
of train.
And so then the interurban, and then in the summertime when Fairview. Dreamland Park was the west side of Fairview Park.
Well, what was Dreamland Park?
That's an amusement park.
Oh.
Fairview Park is like it is now. And you get back there to where the cabin used to be. That was the beginning of Dreamland Park, and it was an amusement park. It had roller coasters and Nickelodeons in there and things like that. And if you had any money, you could go out there and be entertained all day for just about a dollar, you know.
How long was it there?
Oh, it was there for a number of years. It was constructed in 1904, same year that Ferry's Park out here was made. Old Man Ferry's owned all that where it is out there, and they was both opened up the same year of 1904. And so for many years, for several years at least, Dreamland Park was an amusement park. But the West Main car line came out West Main Street and went south north on I can't think of the name of the street now, on down there to the entrance at the side entrance of Fairview Park, and you had to walk from there clear on back to Dreamland. Then later they about the time the interurban came here in the early 1900, about 1904, when the interurban came, well, they ran over the interurban track and would take the people on out to Dreamland Park.
Well, those were great days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, now, you mentioned some of your travels. You do like to travel, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And where have you been? What are some of the places you visited?
Well, my daughter, my first wife, passed away in 1949. And so then I went to Florida. I've been going to Florida. I went down there when she was living. By my health, I had a little breaking my health in 1936 and 7. So I went down to Florida for the winter at the recommendation of Dr. Grider, the father of the one who's here now. And so then he says, you can get the treatment from those sun rays that you're paying for here. And he was right. It took about a month or so, and we didn't have very much money. So we had to watch our nickels pretty carefully. And so then I got my health back and came on. And then, by the way, when I come on back, I got a job as foreman of the bricklayers on a school down in Macon. I built a Macon school down there. Mm-hmm. And the fellow, one of my second customers I was telling you about that I worked all those houses for, he got me that job by preference. And he says, can you handle it? He said, I know you can handle it mentally, if you can physically. He knew I'd been sick. And so he said, no, take any tools down there. Says, you're the foreman on the job. And I had, possibly at least 12 or 15 bricklayers down there. And they was all on WPA. Everybody was on WPA except the superintendent and I and the carpenter foreman. We had no numbers. Everybody else, instead of having names, they had numbers. And so since I wasn't on relief, I had no number. But I did have a wonderful job. It was no high pay. I got more per month than they did, but they got more per hour than I did. And so then that was one of the experiences I had down there.
Then you you were talking about your travels.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that in 1949, in either January or February of 1950, my oldest daughter and I, they had a travel lined up from Miami to Havana. That was before Castro got in. Batista was in there then. And so I thought, well, I'll just take my oldest daughter along. So I drove from Sarasota, which I always winter there, from there down to Miami, left my car there at the dock. And so we got on the boat and we traveled overnight and got into Havana and had a wonderful time there. The guide that met us, he could speak good English. Everything else was Spanish there, you know.
Was this a tour or were you in
Havana? Yeah, it was an all-expense tour. You pay a fee.
With a group?
Well, yeah, but we were traveling on our own.
Yes.
And when we got there, well, I was supposed to be met at the dock site by
the guide.
Yeah. And so everybody else been met but my daughter and I. And a fellow come up to me and says, are you Clarence Sowers? I said, yeah. I thought, who knows me down here in Havana? And he says, where's your blue ribbon at? I said, I don't know. I hadn't looked at the bottom of the envelope. I had all the other brochures and things out of there. And there's the blue ribbon I supposed to put on my lapel, you know. So he'd know to meet us. So he got us in the limousine. And Raymond, you know, all those Cubans are either named Raymond Garcia or something like
Carlos.
That. Oh, yeah, one of those things. So he took us to our hotel. And we had a nice hotel there. It was right near the Prado, going from the hotel on down to where the harbor, before you enter the, well, you enter the harbor and come on around where you dock that. And so then he took us there. Then he picked us up again and took us for a tour that afternoon of part of the city. And he says, now I'll take you back to the hotel for your supper. And the dining room is clear on the top floor. And he says, we got three more that's going to join our party this evening. And so he came up there. Oh, and by the way, there's two Cubans there. I guess they thought my daughter and I were newlyweds. And he come around there, one had a guitar and he was playing away, and the other fellow had them gourds with beads in there, beans in there. And they're singing those Cuban songs to us. And I told my daughter, I says, the joke's on them. They think we're newlyweds down here. And so then, after while he came up, came to our table that evening, eating, he said, I think those three women over there are the ones that are going to be in our party. So he went over and asked the ones. Two of them were sisters, and the other was a friend. And this one, she was so sophisticated, and she says she'd been to France and all this, that, and the other, but her sister was just as nice as she could be, and also the other lady. So they joined our party, and they took us back, well, it was already at the hotel. He said, now you folks get your bib and tucker on, says tonight we're going out night clubbing. So he came and got us in the limousine, and Raymond, he was driving, and the guide was riding up front, and the rest of us in the back. Mm-hmm. And it was a big car, American made. And so then he took us out in a casino. And that's the first time I'd ever been to a gambling place. And it was really something there. And this woman, she wanted to play the stuff, you know, and she got $20 worth of something or other. And she began playing, and boy, they're just melting right away. And after a while, she asked our the guide says, "You want me to stay with you, or you want to be on your own?" And we said, "You stay with us." And he said, "Well, all right." But he said, "Now, don't be tipping and everything like that, because they shake a tourist down." Mm-hmm. So after a while, she was losing all the time, and she asked the guide, said, "Will you play here?" And so he played, and he made three or four strikes for her. She wanted him to keep on. He said, "No, I'm not going to gamble with your money." So after her $20 was gone, well, she quit then. And I didn't see any more of her. But we had a wonderful night. Right out in the open, all that was overhead was the stars and those palm trees. And so we were there for 2 days and two nights. And then we came back to Miami. Mm-hmm. And that was...
That was one wonderful trip that you had.
Oh, yes. Well, it took us in the poor part. All cities have slums, and they have good ones.
Do you see why Castro might have wanted to change the conditions down there?
Well, I don't know. I think he meant well, but it was in bad way when Batista was in there.
But I mean, did you see the poverty that was there?
It was there then, because the guide took us around there and showed us. We saw the very poor part.
There was some reason for a change.
Well, likely so, but when you get downtown, Havana there, the downtown section is all new. Now you get in part of it, the streets are very narrow, and they build right up to the intersection. Yeah. And when they get there, Raymond, he'd blow the horn. And I asked the guide, I said, "What do you keep blowing the horn for?" He said, "Well, whoever gets the intersection first, he blows the horn, and if nobody else blows, well, he drives on in, because you can't see, they're built right up the corner." That's in the old part of Havana. Mm-hmm. Narrow streets, the sidewalks ain't over 2 feet wide, and it's a utility pole. You got to step off the sidewalk, walk around the pole on the street, and then get on the sidewalk again. That's in the old part of Havana.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you had a trip, I believe you said you went to Nassau?
Oh, yeah. About 4 years ago, I think... About 5 years ago, I went to Nassau, and I bought my ticket right here in down to Franklin Travel, but I had to go to Miami to get the boat, and so we went over there. We was over there for 2 days and nights.
You enjoyed that?
Oh, yeah, it was very nice. Their custom there is British, and it was very nice around there. They got just they kept it just as nearly like it always was.
Mm-hmm. And you've also been to Hawaii?
Oh, yeah, that was one wonderful trip. Just by chance, I just got back from a trip to Washington, D.C., and a lady called me and says, "Would you like to go to Hawaii? And I said, "Yes." And that was a 2 weeks. Oh, that was a wonderful trip. Mm-hmm. There for 2 weeks, right on the Waikiki Beach. Okay. Our hotel was on Waikiki Beach. It was... all travel was paid for, and about two or three continental meals, and the rest of the meals we paid for. Mm-hmm. My brother and I, we shared a room, and we went there on the three islands. The first week, we was on Oahu there, right on Waikiki Beach, for a week. And we flew from there to the island of Maui, M-A-U-I. Mm-hmm. And we were there for 3 days, and that was when my birthday was, and I had something or other happen to me. I was kind of in the dumps there for two or three days. I didn't seem to be sick, but I sure wasn't feeling good. Then we flew from there to the big island of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And we landed at Kino. That's where they raise the coffee. Mm-hmm. And so we were there for 3 days, and then we traveled overland by bus from Kino and went over this volcano that erupted here a few years ago. It was smoking when we were there. Mm-hmm. And the driver stopped there, and but we couldn't approach the brink of it there on account of the signs there telling you not to. And the lava was, everything was all lava around there. So we saw farms around there, ranches, I mean, something like grazing land or something. I don't know how it ever grows in that lava rock. And we traveled on around from there to Hilo, which is the south northeast corner there. and that's a beautiful city. And we were there for 4 days. I got to see these orchids and hang on stumps or just anything around there. And it was really, it was something. And that was one wonderful trip. And then we flew on back from there.
And now you have just recently been to Florida and California, both in the same winter.
Oh, yeah, I went down to Florida to be with my two daughters who live in Sarasota. Mm-hmm. I bought a house sight unseen down there in 1949, in the winter of 49. And I'd also bought a lot and went down to Miami and bought another trailer. I had one here, but I hadn't taken it down. So then I bought this house on the recommendation of my oldest daughter. And so after I came back to Decatur, I was living in that trailer. And my youngest daughter moved in that house, and she's still there yet. I can't get her out. Yeah.
Well, you have someone to visit there.
Oh, yeah. And then I built my oldest daughter a new house in 1959.
In Florida?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she still lives there yet. I just wrote her this morning.
Uh-huh. And you have a son in California?
No, he was there. He lives here. He took over my business.
Oh.
But
he just went out to visit?
To visit his daughter who lives at...
someplace in California.
Yeah, right near Los Angeles. Uh-huh. And I had an awful time getting out there because the way the weather was... Mm-hmm. And when I got out there, everything was all right then. And then I was out there for a week, and then I came back by, he has a van, and I came back with he and his wife then, and we got in on a Friday evening at 5 o'clock. And the next day, I was out of milk, and I'd been gone for a week out there. And so he brought me a gallon of milk, and he said, well, since I got to get back home, so I'm going to start Florida this Saturday evening. And so he called me that night, and the next morning, and he got down to Manchester, Tennessee, he and one of his sons, and they went down to the races. Now, I suppose he's possibly his sister's down there now.
Well, you really have had a very wonderful life, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I made one trip down in Mexico. And that was different from what Cuba, something like Cuba, but then those Mexican greasers down there, they're different from what our nationality is. I got to go to the bull ring there, and we had a guide there, drove up the International Bridge, and we was going to cross there, and a guy come up in a taxi cab, and he says, you going to Mexico? And we said, yeah, we thought about it. He said, I'll take you over for $4, as I and my daughter, and her daughter and her son. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that won't be dollar and quarter piece. I says, okay. So then, dollar piece. And so then, little Bibby came to the International Bridge, and he paid the bridge toll over there, and the meter had run up 75 cents, and we wasn't even in Mexico yet. And I thought, well, he told me $4. So we got over there, first thing he did, and he took us to Bullring. From there, the shopping center. And then, in the good part of Mexico, of Juarez, J-U-A-R-E-Z.
Yes, right.
And I can never understand why they call that C-U-I-D-A-D. And they pronounce it Via. Uh-huh. And so then he took us in the poor part of Mexico. And the kids, they were barefoot just in the summertime. And didn't have hardly any clothes on. And they were dirty. And so that was the poor part. Mm-hmm. But I've got some movie pictures I took of the swanky houses there. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite an experience indeed.
Yes. Do you have any other hobbies or interests other than travel?
Oh, well, my daughter, when she tried to get me to retire, and so she wanted me to buy a camera and take pictures. Well, I went and bought a camera of a medium price.
Kodak?
Yeah, a Kodak make. And she said, well, Dad, why don't you get a movie? So I bought me a movie. And my son said, you ought to get one with a fast lens on. So I went and got me another movie. I've got three movies now, and I've got projectors.
You're in business.
Oh, yeah. And they wanted me to get a hobby so I wouldn't work anymore. And so I've had a lot of pleasure out of that. I've taken pictures of the fair down at Tampa. They have their fair down there in February.
Mr. Sowers, do you have any concern about the future of Decatur?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's happening in the last few years. I never thought this would ever happen because I always had thought Decatur, and I still, it's my home and I love it and everything like that, but I hate what's happened downtown like it was in Sarasota. number of years ago, somebody decided to go and put parking meters in downtown. Well, Sears Roebuck and the penny store and one of the dime stores, the big dime store right downtown there, they all moved out to when it's getting shopping centers. Mm-hmm. And they said, if you want no more, move out, we'll take out the meters. Well, they've had the meters out now for 10 or 15 years. And still, there is no downtown.
Business didn't stay.
No. And they're still out there. Mm-hmm. Sears, they built them a great big store like mm-hmm. we have here.
Yes.
And sometimes I wonder whether they're doing the right thing. They just bleed the motors for every dime they can mm-hmm. get for parking fees. We don't want to mm-hmm. be cheap, but it's one of those things, mm-hmm. you know. And it's just too bad about our downtown area. Now, our own lodge, we were down there over Emerson's for over 50 years. We was there 57 years, I think it was, and we had 27 steps to go up to get to mm-hmm. meeting, and some of us are older than what mm-hmm. we used to be. So we sold our equity in that building there, and we bought this church that I built in 19, I was telling you about. And so that's where our hall is mm-hmm. now. And we have the upstairs rented, the church we bought from, they're our tenants now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unfortunate thing. It just is bad for the city. It's got like mm-hmm. this, and I just don't know. I hope that something can come to pass mm-hmm. so they can be revived again.
But generally, are you optimistic about the American life today, say, for your grandchildren?
Oh, yes. It's so much different what it was when I was growing up and all like that. And, of course, they have relief in these days and everything like that. There ain't none of my kids is on relief or haven't been. But then in this day and age, well, if you can't make it, you go down mm-hmm. to relief office and they'll set you up. And that's a mm-hmm. poor thing to do, I think. Yeah. I was taught you had to make your own way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Sowers, we thank you very much for your reminiscences. Well, we really have enjoyed this.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
I hope you continue to enjoy your retirement for many years.
Thank you. Yeah, you bet.
You have been listening to Mr. Clarence Sowers. This is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library.